You are Locked On Seahawks, your daily Seattle Seahawks podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Greetings to all. This is Corbin Smith, your host for Locked On Seahawks, joined as always by my co-host Rob Rang. Happy Wednesday to all of our listeners. Jam-packed, offensive-centric show coming your way during Seattle's bye week. Help support your local businesses, whether they're your corner stores, coffee spots, or favorite shops. Local businesses have always been on your team, supporting you and your community. But right now, more than ever, local businesses need our support. So let's be there for them. The next time you go shopping, make the choice to shop at local businesses and look for the contactless symbol and tap to pay with a contactless Visa to help support your community. Because where and how you shop matters. Visa, everywhere you want to be, official partner of the NFL. Now for your lead story here on Locked On Seahawks. In the midst of their bye week, the Seahawks are the NFL's only 5-0 team. That obviously could change next week. Three other teams being 4-0, including the Titans after their blowout win over the Bills last night. But the Seahawks, for now, they became the 71st team to accomplish that feat since 1978, when the NFL moved from 14 to 16 game schedules. So really, Rob, the big question here, what does that historically say about Seattle's Super Bowl chances? Because this is something the Seahawks have never been. They've never been here before. They have never had a 5-0 record at any time previously in their franchise history. And Pete Carroll would be the first to tell you, it's not how you start, but how you finish, whether it's a game or a season we're talking about. Nonetheless, this is a historically significant record jumping out to a 5-0 start.
Yeah, it's absolutely huge. As you just said, Corbin, I mean, it's not only that there are only 71 teams that have ever got to this point in the modern era, but it's obviously the very first time the Seattle Seahawks have got to this point, undefeated at this point in the season of 5-0. And they've done it in such a variety of ways. They've done it with their MVP caliber quarterback, Russell Wilson, making the big throws to put them in position to win on offense. They've had their defense, while it's given up yardage at a record pace, at the same time, they also have been among the NFL's leaders in quarterback hits and in turnovers forced. And so those are some things that statistically suggest that Seattle's run should continue. But as you said in the opening, and Pete Carroll says this so many times, of course you can't win the Super Bowl in the first quarter of the season, but you can take a really big step towards doing that. And so it's great for the Seahawks that they have started off as well. Now the big question is, can they continue it?
Yeah, and the interesting thing here, as you mentioned, you can certainly set yourself up for a Super Bowl run by starting off 5-0, especially if you're a team like the Seahawks. And this year, obviously with COVID, it's not near as big of a deal because fans are not in the stands, at least for now. The Seahawks have had no fans at their three home games to this point. But a 5-0 start is really going to position you to make a push for that one bye. I'm still getting used to saying that. We don't have two byes anymore with the seventh playoff team being added, but that is a big start if you're trying to get that home field advantage and that first round bye in the postseason by jumping out to a 5-0 record off the bat. Some fun facts. Of the 70 prior teams that started 5-0 since 1978, 27 of them made the Super Bowl. So we're talking almost 40%. And 12 of those teams won it all, around 15%. So this has been historically, if you jump out to a 5-0 start, it doesn't necessarily mean that you're guaranteed to get to the Super Bowl, but almost 40%, a good chunk of these teams have been able to maintain that success into the playoffs and make deep playoff runs. What I've found most interesting, though, since 2010, only one team that has started 5-0 has had the Lombardi Trophy at the end of the year, and that was the 2015 Denver Broncos. Otherwise, you have to go all the way back to the 2009 New Orleans Saints to find your last Super Bowl champion that opened the year with a 5-0 record. So compared to earlier decades where there were two, three teams in each one of them that started off with that 5-0 record, the last decade, it hasn't been quite as kind for who's going to hold the Lombardi Trophy.
Yeah, those are some interesting numbers, Corbin. I'm happy that you're able to kind of give us that perspective. I one of the things I've noticed about the NFL playoffs over the years is that the teams that I think are the best teams in October are not the teams that are the healthiest often in December and in January. And that to me is one of the biggest reasons why we have seen the teams that that maybe didn't have the greatest start wind up having the big finish. I mean, you think about some of those wild card teams like the Steelers, like the Giants over the last decade or two that have been able to go on and win the Super Bowl despite barely sneaking into the playoffs in the first place. And so to me, this is a story of the teams that get hot in the playoffs are the ones that wind up being the most successful. And so I think that that is significant because, of course, this year with COVID, with the lack of fans in the stands, all of those things, it's unprecedented. So the historical perspective, I think, is helpful. But at the same time, this is an unprecedented season that I think there's going to be all kinds of things that are going to be changing this year. And the Seahawks are obviously going to be one of those teams that's hoping to reverse that trend and become the first team of this time period to be able to actually start the season 5-0 and still wind up with a Lombardi trophy.
Yeah, it'll be the first team in 6 years. You mentioned it is a whole new world right now. All this historical perspective only matters so much when you're talking about something the NFL has never dealt with before, a pandemic. It's just a new world for the players, the coaches, everybody that is involved, fans trying to watch the game. And it's interesting, you know, I was tweeting out some of these stats earlier and some fans were saying, well, with the way our defense is playing, though, we have given up a record number of passing yards. There's no way that we can be in the mix for a Super Bowl. And this is what's interesting. Another fact that I can throw out there. Three of the top five teams of all time giving up passing yards to opponents. Three of those top five teams, including the Seahawks at number one, started the season at 5-0. The other two were the 2013 Denver Broncos, which obviously we know they lost the Super Bowl that year to the Seahawks, but it was the record-setting offense the Broncos had on that team. And then in 2018, the Kansas City Chiefs, they were number five on the list, and they started off 5-0. They made it to the divisional round of the playoffs in Patrick Mahomes' first year as a full-time starter. So it kind of paints that picture. You and I have talked about it before. Yardage is kind of a garbage stat in a lot of ways. And that picture definitely is painted again with those numbers telling you, yeah, those three teams gave up a lot of yards, but I guarantee if you go back and you look at turnover numbers and the fact they all had explosive offenses, they were able to keep winning games and were a threat when they got to the playoffs. So the Seahawks are hoping that they can continue that trend that the Broncos and Chiefs had with Russell Wilson under center, of course, a defense that's opportunistic.
Exactly. And that's the thing, is as we just talked about, I mean, 2020 is such an unprecedented season that I think that regardless of whether it be because of COVID, because of the lack of the fans, I think to also because of the willingness of the referees essentially to swallow their whistles, that I think that you are going to see just absolutely crazy numbers being given up by defenses all throughout the NFL. I think you're going to see some records broken this year, Corbin, from the quarterback perspective, from total offense perspective, from receivers perspective. I mean, we talked yesterday, you know, for example, about DK Metcalf, and I'm sure that we're going to be talking about him today as well as far as being one of Seattle's biggest superstars. I mean, he is on pace to put up numbers that are just absolutely extraordinary, and he's not alone. I mean, there are lots of receivers who are putting up crazy numbers this year. So I think that for those who are just going off of historical statistics to explain away why Seattle cannot win a Super Bowl, then put down the statistics, turn on the tape, and watch the games. The Seahawks are undefeated, and they're beating teams in a variety of ways. And I don't know that there's any team in the league right now that I would take over the Seahawks if I was a betting man.
When we come back for the second quarter, as I mentioned earlier, it's an offensive-centric episode here during Seattle's bye week. Coming up in the second quarter, we're going to be looking at the biggest surprises and the biggest disappointments for Seattle on the offensive side of the football through the first five games of the season. We'll be right back. You're listening to the Locked On Seahawks podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. This football season will be different, and Pepsi is here to get you ready for game day, no matter how you watch this season. Whether you're like me in the press box or you're watching with friends and family at home, Pepsi is the refreshment you need to power through game day and become a member of the League of Football Watchers. These passionate fans are the real generational talent that Pepsi fuels, because Pepsi isn't made for those who play the game, it's made for those who watch it. Pepsi, made for football watching. Welcome back to the Locked On Seahawks podcast. I'm your host, Corbin Smith. Joining me, as always, for our Wednesday show, Rob Rang. Rob, we are now 5 weeks into the season. Crazy to say that already, but the Seahawks are, like any team during a bye, evaluating where they're at, trying to figure out how they can improve moving forward. And looking at the offensive side of the football, aside from that atrocious first half performance against the Vikings on Sunday night, this offense, led by Russell Wilson and DK Metcalf, has been lights out all year. So kind of reviewing the first five games and kind of where we're heading going into the closing stretch, those last 11 regular season games, and what should be a postseason appearance, let's talk biggest surprises and biggest disappointments on the offensive side of the football. Let's start with the offensive surprises. What has been the biggest surprise to you during these first 5 weeks watching the Seahawks on offense?
Well, I think you have to start off with the offensive line. Specifically with the center, Ethan Posick, just wrestling away that starting position early on in training camp. The Brandon Schell signed over from the Jets, basically being a significant improvement over Jermaine Ifedi. Those were two positions that I thought the Seattle was really going to struggle with. I'm not going to say that Damian Lewis, the rookie, is a surprise to me. I'm very, very high on him. I really like the way he fits in. But still, you are talking about three to four different starters along your offensive line. I don't think that Russell Wilson, as optimistic as he is, could have thought that the Seattle's offensive line would be protecting him as well as they are so far.
Yeah, it's interesting you mentioned that. We're going to be throwing in some listener responses as part of this segment as well. Mike Sent said, Posick has been great. Give him an A. And I would have to agree, as you and I have mentioned, we need to see a more extended run of games from him. But these first five games, he has been really impressive at that center spot. And maybe what's been the biggest surprise for me is just the overall depth of this offensive line. They have been able to rotate players in and out of the lineup. We've seen Jordan Simmons get a lot of snaps. We have seen Jamarco Jones get snaps out there. They even started mixing in Cedric Ogbuehi in there at right tackle when they were playing the Dolphins. So they are rotating guys in there. They're keeping players fresh. And there really hasn't been a noticeable drop-off when they've done that. When Damian Lewis missed most of the Week 3 game against the Cowboys with an ankle injury, Jordan Simmons stepped in and played outstanding football. And so to me, that has been the biggest surprise, is not just how well this line is meshed so quickly, but how much depth that they have up front in the trenches. And the outside, for me, my biggest surprise, I don't know necessarily that I'm surprised that we're seeing David Moore jump out, because we've seen flashes from him, but we had never seen a consistency from him in his last couple seasons with the Seahawks. And this year, we have certainly seen that. He has jumped off the board. He's caught most of the throws that have been headed his direction. He almost made, somehow, he's already had a couple stunning touchdown catches. He almost had another one the other night against the Vikings. I mean, he's just, his body control and his athleticism are just through the roof. And so he's been an outstanding third receiver. But really, Freddie Swain is the one that jumps out to me. I thought Freddie Swain was going to make the team, but I didn't think that he was going to be a factor that was catching passes every single game for the Seahawks. And he's done that. He has at least one reception in every single game so far for the Seahawks. He's made a couple big plays on special teams too. He's getting more opportunities, getting more snaps out there as the season progresses. So it looks like Seattle has got a really nice sixth round steal there in Freddie Swain.
Yeah, it absolutely appears that way. I mean, Freddie Swain has been terrific. David Moore, as you mentioned, has been terrific. I think that those have absolutely been two of the more positive, storylines for the Seahawks on offense, just because we didn't know what to expect from either of those two players. You know, the whole time I've been very concerned about Seattle's depth at the wide receiver position, just given DK Metcalf's history in the past, Tyler Lockett's small frame. But at the same time, I think you feel a lot better about Seattle's depth at the wide receiver position. Obviously, Russell Wilson, just the brilliant quarterback that he is, he's going to help receivers look good. But David Moore has made Russell Wilson look good with some of those acrobatic catches, as you alluded to. And then the same thing with Freddie Swain and that instant speed that he possesses. It's one of the things that I've been a little disappointed, and we'll talk about this a little bit more later, with the lack of a Josh Gordon, the lack of a Philip Dorsett. But given the way that Seattle's younger, cheaper receivers have played in the absence of those veterans, then I think that has, again, been one of the real positive surprises, one of the real reasons that the Seahawks are undefeated at this point.
One of our listeners who actually is named LJ Collier matters, which I would agree, he absolutely matters to the Seahawks team. He agrees with us, biggest surprise has been Freddie Swain's usage, did not expect him to beat out John Ursua, and he's already getting more involved than Ursua ever was. And that was something by the end of camp, it started to become apparent that they were really leaning towards Swain being the guy there rather than Ursua. And like I said, he's had a catch, at least one catch in every single game, continues to get more opportunities as a result, because to this point, every chance he's gotten, he's taken advantage of. And so that's an exciting development on the outside. Speaking of the outside, I'm not going to say that DK Metcalf having a big season surprises me, relatively speaking. But I did not anticipate that we were going to be sitting here at the bye week and DK Metcalf was going to be closing in on 600 receiving yards, already has 5 touchdowns, he should have 6, and really looks like he's not only going to be a Pro Bowl receiver, I think if they picked All-Pro teams right now, Rob, DK Metcalf is one of the first team All-Pro receivers. He has been that good.
He absolutely has. I agree with you. I think he has to be probably the leading vote getter as far as being an All-Pro wide receiver, especially when you consider, you know, that some of the other, you know, established superstars throughout the NFL at that position have struggled with durability and other issues, and it's kind of left an opportunity here for Metcalf, but he has absolutely just taken it and run with it. You know, you mentioned or alluded to the fact that he had the one touchdown that he should have had, but you know, to not only to make the splashy plays that he has, but the clutch plays, the fourth down reception just to put Seattle in position to get the game winning touchdown this past week against Minnesota, to get the game winning touchdown himself. I think he's just been absolutely spectacular. When Seattle drafted him out of Ole Miss a couple of years ago, Corbin, I mean, I just gushed about his upside. But it is remarkable to see a player who has DK Metcalf's physical talent and also the work ethic to really maximize that ability. I think that there is a chance that when we're all said and done, that Russell Wilson and DK Metcalf are going to be two of the elite players that's ever graced Seattle sports. And I mean in every single sport. And there is no one that I have ever seen in any sport for this, Seattle, that is physically as talented as DK Metcalf. I think that his potential is absolutely through the roof, and we could be talking about the first of many All-Pro seasons.
Yeah, I think going into this year, you and I mentioned, well, he might be in contention to make the Pro Bowl this year if he's able to get over 1,000 yards. He's on pace right now for over 1,500 yards and over 10 touchdowns. If he's able to even come close to replicating the production that he's had the first 5 games here, and there's a lot of room for him to improve. He's had some drops. He's had a fumble. If he can clean some of that stuff up, then he absolutely is going to be a front runner to be a first-team All-Pro. And what would that tell you about the Let Russ Cook movement? If Russell Wilson's a first-team All-Pro, which right now I think he would be, and then DK Metcalf, his top receiver, also was a first-team All-Pro, what a change that would be from the Seahawks offenses that we have seen in the last decade with Pete Carroll at the helm. They ran the football bunch. This team just slinging all over the place, and DK Metcalf has been a big part of that. Now, going to the biggest disappointments, it's really tough for me to point out disappointments with this offense aside from that first half the other night, because they've just been so darn good. The running backs have played well, but I guess that's maybe where I would start with my first big disappointment here has been the way that the depth pieces behind Chris Carson have played. I've been disappointed, as North Fresh Kane was, this is one of the tweets that was sent into us, the lack of touches for DJ Dallas, especially with Carlos Hyde out. I would agree with that. I was hoping to see a little bit more of DJ Dallas by this point, and I think he played well with the limited opportunities he got against the Miami Dolphins in week 4. So not getting any offensive snaps on Sunday night really surprised me. And then Carlos Hyde, I went into this season thinking, man, they get this number 2 back that's coming off a 1,000-yard season. And when he's played, when he's had his opportunities, he's done some nice things, but he has very limited production. He's missed the last 2 games with a shoulder injury. Who knows if he's going to be back after they come back from their bye. He probably will be, but we thought he was going to play last week, and it didn't happen. And so I've been a little disappointed with the way that situation has played out. Travis Homer, I don't really think it's his fault, but a lot of the times he's coming to the game, it seems like it stunted the offense when he's ran the ball. Teams have known what was coming. And again, that's not the running back's fault necessarily, but That might be one area that I can nitpick at a little bit.
Yeah, I agree with you again, Corbin. I think that we're in a similar situation here in that we're trying to find some things that we can nitpick with Seattle's offense that is putting up points at an historic rate, at least from a Seattle perspective. And so there are certainly some things that we can criticize. And I think Carlos Hyde and his lack of durability would be one. The use or lack thereof of DJ Dallas, it is fairly easy to predict what type of plays Seattle is going to run. I would agree with you again when it comes to Travis Homer. I think all of those things are legitimate issues. At the same time, we had a question yesterday about Shaquem Griffin on the defensive side of the ball and basically saying, hey, we should be playing Shaquem Griffin more. And my argument to that was, well, at whose expense? Well, I don't – if these are the biggest concerns that you have for the Seahawks at this point, then I think the Seahawks fans should be pretty happy because – Chris Carson is, again, running at a Pro Bowl level, if not an All-Pro level. And I think that he is clearly, Seattle's bell cow back. And so whoever is the second back, considering all the talented runners that the Seahawks have, and I should mention talented pass protectors, considering the impact that Travis Homer has had in that area of the game, then I think, again, the Seahawks are feeling pretty good about themselves. But, of course, there are some things that to be concerned about. And I'll mention one of them. I don't love the fact that the kicker, Jason Myers, only has 2 field goal attempts at this point. Now, he is 2 for 2, and one of them was a 55-yarder against the Miami Dolphins that, to me, just shows every bit of the leg strength and the grit that you're looking for when Seattle signed him. But at the same time, I do question moving forward, is he going to be the kicker who has the consistency that you're looking for? And because we are basically picking at nits right now with Seattle's offense, that would be something that I would be a little concerned about. And again, you mentioned the biggest one, the struggles on third down against the Minnesota Vikings. Obviously, that cannot continue in the future.
Yeah, third down stinkers is something that I had down on my list because right now Seattle ranks 31st in the NFL in third down conversion rate at 32%. That has got to get better because there's going to be games where they're going to need to be able to extend some drives, and they did not show that they could do that on Sunday night against the Vikings. They got lucky and ended up winning the game, but as far as one other disappointment for me, I'm not going to elaborate too much on this because it hasn't been his fault. He's been out with an injury, but I was so excited to see what Philip Dorsett could do in this offense, and maybe we'll get to see after the bye. It sounds like there's a good chance he's going to be taken off injured reserve coming out of the bye week. Maybe he makes his debut as a Seahawk against the Cardinals, but he really looked good those first couple weeks of training camp before his foot issue came up. He was looking really good with Russell Wilson's downfield threat. You put him out there with DK Metcalf and Tyler Lockett, I still think as well as David Moore has played, as well as Freddie Swain has played, Philip Dorsett is going to give you another elite speedster that Russell Wilson is going to love throwing the ball downfield to. And defenses, that's just one other thing that they have to try to worry about when you already have 2 really good receivers. You got a good tight end in Greg Olsen, another one in Will Disley. So I'm disappointed we haven't gotten to see him yet, but he'll have an opportunity, I think, here, as long as that foot is healed up, to come back and make an impact for the Seahawks heading into the second half of the season. Speaking of the second half of the season, when we come back in the third quarter, we've got 11 games left to play. It's a long year. You and I are going to throw out 5 key questions for the Seahawks heading towards the second half of the season. Hopefully a long playoff run. Don't go away. You're listening to the Locked On Seahawks podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. As an avid weightlifter and distance runner, I'm always looking for an edge when it comes to nutrition, seeking delicious, healthy protein bars without the crazy additives. Since being diagnosed with celiac disease, my options have been pretty limited. Until now. Enter in the Built Bar, a low-calorie, low-sugar, high-protein, gluten-free protein bar that tastes like a candy bar. Built Bar now comes in 18 mouth-watering flavors, including 6 new delicious flavors such as caramel brownie and cookies and cream. My all-time favorite is peanut butter brownie, which is 20 grams of protein, just 3 grams of sugar, and 3 grams of net carbs. Since I had my first Built Bar, I never go without one when I hit the weight room or go for a jog. All Built Bars are 100% chocolate, nut and gluten-free, soft and easy to chew, and don't have the nasty aftertaste of competing protein bars. Sound too good to be true? Go to BuiltBar.com and build your own custom box with your choice of flavors using the code LOCKEDON for $10 off. You will also receive a free cooler with your first purchase while supplies last. So what are you waiting for? Change your workout game by going to BuiltBar.com and use promo code LOCKEDON and you'll get 20% off your next order. Use promo code LOCKEDON for 20% off at BuiltBar.com. Talking about erectile dysfunction isn't easy. Usually we just brush it off or blame ourselves, saying things like, I lost my mojo. Or we avoid it altogether with excuses like, I had a long day at work, or sorry honey, I'm just not feeling it. But with Roman, it is easy to talk about it. With a real healthcare professional who can prescribe real medication, it's simple, safe, and totally discreet. With Roman, you can get a free online evaluation and ongoing care for ED, all from the comfort and privacy of your own home. A healthcare professional will work with you to find the best treatment plan. If medication is appropriate, Roman will ship it to you with free two-day shipping. Erectile dysfunction used to be tough to tackle, but now there's Roman. Just go to GetRoman.com/XXX to connect with a healthcare professional for an online visit and take care of it. Go to GetRoman.com/LockedOnNFL today. If approved, you'll get $15 off your first order of ED treatment. That's GetRoman.com/LockedOnNFL. GetRoman.com/LockedOnNFL. Welcome back to the Locked On Seahawks podcast. This is your host, Corbin Smith, joined by Rob Rang for our Wednesday episode. Continuing an offensive-centric show, we've got 11 games left to go, so more than half of the season. We still aren't to the trade deadline yet, not to the midway point. It's a long season. As Pete Carroll would tell you, it's a marathon, not a sprint. Building off of our discussion from last quarter, looking at surprises and disappointments on offense for the Seahawks, there's still a lot of football left to be played, and there's certainly some key questions that this offense must address heading into the second part of the season. And I think the most important question coming up, this is one the Seahawks are going to have to answer soon. I talked about Carlos Hyde dealing with a shoulder injury, DJ Dallas getting limited opportunities, Travis Homer having some struggles running the ball. He's done well in pass protection, but Seattle's got another running back coming back soon in Rashad Penny. And the big question is here, whenever he does come back, whether that's week 7, week 8, week 9, whenever the Seahawks are able to bring him back, it sounds like he is getting really close to being ready to play again. Where does Rashad Penny fit into the Seattle Seahawks backfield plans once he's able to return?
That's a great question. It's a fun question to think about, because Rashad Penny brings a different element of breakaway speed to the equation that the Seahawks' current running backs just don't have. You know, and so if the Rashad Penny is in fact healthy and is able to return to the Seahawks' rushing attack, then I really think that would be a significant addition for them. You know, you're going to have a lot of fans out there, Corbin, as you well know, who are basically going to be clamoring for the Seahawks to make a trade for this player or pick up somebody on the waiver wire or whatever. I mean, you have a really good football player, Rashad Penny, who sounds like he's very close to being able to return. And that is significant, because you just rattled off all those names of the other backs on Seattle's roster. But I think that it's important to remember that Chris Carson in 4 NFL seasons has yet to finish a full season with 16 starts. And so I think that you do have to plan for the potential inevitability of Seattle needing some fresh blood, some fresh legs at the running back position. And so if Rashad Penny is able to get back into the mix, then I think that you can assume that he is basically going to jump ahead of Carlos Hyde and be taking on that number two running back role, likely getting between 7 and 10 carries a game.
Yeah, and I'm going to be making some of these comments just based on the fact I knew this was going to happen. As soon as word came out that the Jets were first going to trade Le'Veon Bell, and then they ended up releasing him, of course, we had a bunch of listeners reach out and ask, you know, is there a chance Seattle's going to look at Le'Veon Bell? It's absolutely a no. It is not going to happen. And the big reason for that is Rashad Penny's impending return. He is going to be back sooner rather than later. He is getting close from everything that I've been told. And I am so eager to see, because you and I both know, Rob, Rashad Penny has been a disappointment for much of his first two seasons. He's battled injuries, and when he has had his chances, especially his rookie season, he really struggled. But the two games before he got hurt last year, we started to see that explosive talent that the Seahawks thought they were getting out of San Diego State. That 129-yard game against the Eagles where he busted a 58-yard touchdown run, as you mentioned. He just has that extra gear that I love Chris Carson. I love Carlos Hyde. I love DJ Dallas, Travis Homer. None of those guys have that ability to just shift to a third gear like Rashad Penny does. And we've seen what this offense is already capable of doing. I just have a feeling that Rashad Penny, with the fact that he's going to bring you that element of speed and explosiveness that you haven't had in the backfield up to this point, I have a feeling that we are going to see him play a big role once he comes back. So maybe that makes it he's on IR for a few extra weeks or on the PUP list for a few extra weeks because they want to make sure he's 100% healthy. But when they bring him back, I think they are going to have a significant role for him on offense with Chris Carson. I think Carlos Hyde should probably be the one thinking, yeah, I'm going to have a pretty diminished role here whenever Rashad Penny's back, because right now, he's just too much like Chris Carson. Rashad Penny just gives you that different element, different playing style that could really put this offense over the top and make it even more difficult for opponents to slow down. Second big question here, we kind of hit on them last quarter with how the offensive line has been surprising. The biggest question with that group now, can that line that had so many new starters, got a nice mix of veterans and young guys, can that group maintain its stellar play over a 16-game season?
I think it can. And I know that maybe sounds a bit optimistic. You know, I mean, you just know how historically Seattle has struggled with the offensive line. You know that the age of Dwayne Brown. But at the same time, you talked about this in the first quarter, Corbin, and it's something that I think bears repeating, that the Seahawks have been constantly rotating their offensive linemen. And I think that that's really, really wise. I think that it's inevitable that you're going to have injuries. It's especially inevitable in a year like 2020 with all the challenges that it has. And so to be able to make sure that basically everybody along that offensive line understands their roles and is able to play multiple positions. But at the same time, I also look at Seattle's remaining schedule. And we know that there are some fearsome pass rushers that are coming up. But at the same time, the Arizona Cardinals' best pass rusher, Chandler Jones, just went down. The San Francisco 49ers' best pass rusher, Nick Bosa, went down. You know, this is not the gauntlet of deadly pass rushers that the Seattle schedule looked like it was going to have. And so I do believe that especially considering all the skill position talent that Seattle has, I think the teams are going to be very nervous to try to blitz Russell Wilson very often. And I think that Seattle's starting five is going to be able to slow down a lot of opponents starting four much more frequently in 2020 than they have in the past.
Yeah, I'm extremely optimistic that this line is just now hitting, I don't even know if they've hit their ceiling yet. I mean, I think this is a group that when you look at who they have across the board, they have a couple players that were breaking into this starting lineup, like Brandon Shell, who has started a lot of games, but he only had a three-week training camp, really, to get acclimated with this team. Damian Lewis is a third-round rookie who has played well, but there's so much room for him to improve, and I expect as the year progresses, he's going to continue to get better. Ethan Posick hasn't had a lot of snaps at center in the NFL, so he's going to keep getting better, too. Dwayne Brown has played outstanding football, too. He's showing no signs of slowing down at 35. They can keep having him sit out every practice. I don't care. He has been playing great, so I look at the depth that they have with Jordan Simmons being able to slide in at either guard spot. Jamarco Jones can. Maybe Phil Haynes re-enters the equation at some point. So there's no doubt in my mind that this group can maintain its play. I think they can continue to get better as the season progresses. Big question number three here. We talked about Philip Dorsett. We talked about Freddie Swain, David Moore. But there's that one big name that still has not been reinstated yet in Josh Gordon. And still might ultimately be the big X factor when we're talking about Seattle's receiving weapons. So really the bottom line question is, will we ever see Josh Gordon at any point this year? I think a lot of people thought he was going to be in a uniform well by this point, and yet here we are in week six and he still has not been reinstated.
And that's why I have some concerns about that. I think that, the fact that he is back with Seattle, and so that is definitely helpful. But at the same time, the fact that he has not actually been on the field yet for the Seahawks, I think that this kind of goes back to the NFL. And I think Roger Goodell has got a lot bigger fish to fry, so to speak, before he's going to be worried about trying to get players back into the league who have had as many issues as Josh Gordon has. There's no question. We all saw last year just at least glimpses of what Josh Gordon would be able to bring to the offense. And so I think the Seahawks Seahawks fans should be really excited about the possibility of getting Josh Gordon back. But at the same time, I think that it's wise by the Seahawks to not, you know, basically have all their eggs in that one basket and hope that Josh Gordon comes back. And if he doesn't, then you're in trouble. That's why it's been so big to have David Moore and Freddie Swain among the receivers stepping up for the Seahawks as the team hopes that they get Josh Gordon back.
We talked about this last week. I think with the jump that David Moore has made, I don't even know necessarily that you need Josh Gordon at this point. Now, you could easily have an injury that creates an issue. That's something that could very easily happen if Philip Dorsett is not able to get healthy, and when he tries to come back this time, it doesn't work out. Then obviously, Josh Gordon's a big-time talent, and Russell Wilson wants to have him out there. But I guess the bottom line here, I've had so many people ask, you know, what's up with Josh Gordon? Why hasn't he been reinstated yet? You know, Roger Goodell does not have a timetable that he has to abide by here. This was an indefinite suspension. A player that's had a bunch of suspensions in his career has had a hard time staying out of trouble. And so, you like you mentioned, they're dealing with the COVID-19 stuff. There's a lot on Roger Goodell's plate right now that's more important than, do I want to get Josh Gordon reinstated? I think he will be at some point, but it's clearly evident that that has not been a top priority, and given his indefinite status, it's not something that he has to force the issue on. Roger Goodell doesn't have to tomorrow make a decision on it, and I think since the suspension came before the new CBA too, the whole 60-day window after filing an appeal, I don't think he has to necessarily abide by that because of timing issues. Don't hold me to that, but I don't think that that is something that the league has to do given the fact that Gordon was suspended before that was signed. Fourth big question here, what are the chances of Russell Wilson maintaining his torrid pace? Me personally, Rob, we've talked about this a few weeks ago. I think he's got a very good chance to hang tough with Peyton Manning's record of 55 passing touchdowns. I think he's got a chance to make a really good run at that. My one concern is the weather, especially at home games, and the fact the Seahawks may lean on their run game more later games when the weather starts really getting bad. I don't know that he can get to that 50-55 touchdown level when you're considering those circumstances. So I don't think it's necessarily that he's not capable. I just wonder if there's going to be other factors at play that prevent him from really pushing for that record.
That's an excellent point, Corbin. I'm happy that you made it. You look at Seattle's schedule, and they play at home three of the last 5 weeks, but the other one, the very last game of the regular season, is at San Clair against the 49ers. So four of the five last games of the season are going to be on the West Coast, where temperatures generally are a little bit milder. So you may have the rain, and as we've discussed before, Russell Wilson is not necessarily at his best in the rain, which is kind of ironic. From a national perspective, a lot of people assume the Seahawks are going to just flourish in the rain. But at the same time, I think that while the weather is significant, I think also the fact that Seattle's defense has given up yards as much as they have is one of the reasons why there is a possibility that Russell Wilson will be able to at least challenge Peyton Manning's record, if not break it. I just look at some of the teams that are coming up on Seattle's schedule, and you know, Arizona, of course, being a big one that is coming up next. But they have two of the next five games against Arizona. And I think that we all have seen Kyler Murray. He's the reigning NFC player of the week, and the offensive exploits that they've been able to have there. I think that that is a game that Seattle potentially, Russell Wilson potentially be able to put up some big numbers in those games. There are definitely some formidable opponents, Buffalo, Philadelphia, even Washington. That's the one game, as I mentioned, in December that is on the East Coast. And Washington in December is a whole different place, even though that team is not as good of a team. But at the same time, their defense is pretty stout. So I think that there is plenty of reason, to think that you're right, Corbin, that Russell Wilson's not going to be able to get to those numbers. But at the same time, again, their struggles on defense and the fact that they do wind up most of their games at home towards the down the stretch, I think could kind of build some momentum for the let Russell Wilson cook and the MVP chance.
And the last question real quick, we touched on this a little bit last quarter, so not going to spend too long on it, but as I mentioned, the Seahawks right now rank next to last in the NFL in third down conversion rates, and there's ways you can combat that. You can just avoid third downs, which the first four games of the season, the Seahawks were doing a really good job, and even this last game when their offense was working, those possessions, they scored points, they were moving the ball really well on first and second down. They picked up some fourth down conversions on that last drive, but there are going to be games where, against really good football teams, you can't go 0-for-7 on third down. You are going to have to be able to have some extended drives where you move the football, maybe on the ground some, the short to intermediate passing game, where you're going to have 3rd and 2, 3rd and 3, 3rd and 4. You've got to be able to pick those up. And unfortunately, this last game, they had way too many 3rd and long situations. They got to play better on early downs. But to me, that is one other area that this football team on offense absolutely is going to have to be better the last 11 games of the season. They don't have to be a top 5, top 10 team, but 31st out of 32 teams, that's unacceptable when you have Russell Wilson as your quarterback and the weapons they have. They have to be better on third down than what they have been up to this point.
No question about it, Corbin. I mean, during the offseason, of course, we kind of break down some of the games, some of the opponents that Seattle has faced. And one of the things that I enjoyed is we kind of talked about some of the games in the past that had like a statistical anomaly. I think that Seattle's victory over the Minnesota Vikings, despite not being able to convert a single third down, is one of the biggest statistical anomalies that you are going to see. I would be stunned if the Seahawks were able to pull off another victory this year or anytime close when they were unable to get a third down conversion. And so I would agree. I think that is the single biggest question, other than health, remaining healthy. I think that is the single biggest question this team is facing down the stretch. And if they are able to improve their third down conversion rate on offense, then I think that, again, that we're talking about a very special season, especially on offense, for your Seattle Seahawks.
Make sure to follow me on Twitter at Corbin Smith NFL. You can follow Rob at Rob Rang. Subscribe to our show on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Stitcher, Spotify, wherever you listen to your podcasts, by going to our website, LockedOnSeahawks.com. Coming up on a Thursday show, we're going to flip the script. Very similar show style, but we're going to be talking all defense tomorrow, and I can tell you there will be a lot more to nitpick on the defensive side of the football than there was on offense. So we're looking forward to that, the surprises, the biggest disappointments, and of course, key questions for Seattle's defense going into the final 11 games of the season. Enjoy the rest of your Wednesday. Go Hawks!